The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Well, hello and welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show, EDU edition for this week. As we continue on within June 2025, if you listen to this, I was about to say live, but recently after recording. And June is National Annuity Awareness Month. So we focus our EDU shows in particular on annuities and have a heavy dose of annuity questions during our Q&A shows. But last week we had gotten into the different types of annuities, some of the headline names like an immediate annuity versus deferred annuity, deferred income annuities, different fixed annuities, talked a fair amount about MIGAs, multi-year guaranteed annuities, how those work. We delved into a bit of the world of variable annuities, which is its own animal. And at the end of the show, we kind of let you know that we were going to veer off towards fixed indexed annuities today, as well as one of the more recent creations in the annuity world, RILAs, Registered Index Linked Annuities, RILA, which is what a lot of people call a hybrid, kind of a mixture of other types of annuities all in one product. So that's where we're going today, all in our effort not to try to sell you an annuity or convince you to go buy one, but rather just to educate you on how these things work, because they are tools in the toolbox of life and of retirement planning, which is, of course, what we focus on the Retirement and IRA Show. And some of these are, we find, not particularly attractive for what we do, but certain types of annuities we find quite useful as a tool in the world of retirement planning. So our efforts to educate you is just to inform you so that you can make the best decision for yourself if you were interested at all in the world of annuities. So Jim's back from his travels. He successfully made it all the way back across the country in his brand new pickup truck that we've talked about on previous shows. Didn't get hailed on the way, which is lucky. He's got a brand new, got the new car smell in it and everything. Made it all the way without any hail, but then he got home just in time to see some of his garden get some damage once again this year. So he's even more hot to trot to get out of the Front Range of Colorado and try to grow a garden when the heavens open and dump ice balls on it. And maybe move somewhere where it's a little more, I don't know, copacetic with the gardening efforts. So, Jim, I hope you didn't lose everything.
Well, this time of year, hi, folks, this is Jim. I am back, literally. I got back to Colorado just a few hours ago. After driving from Cincinnati to the Denver area. The drive itself went quite well until I got home. And literally 15 minutes after I got home, remember when in the morning, it's a Tuesday today, we always do a team meeting on Tuesdays. So I joined the Zoom call from my car just as I was crossing the Kansas border into Colorado. And of course, I wasn't on the video Zoom, but I could listen to everybody over the speaker system inside the truck. And I was remarking, Chris, it's freaking dark out. And it looked like the clouds were going to open. And I made it all the way to my house. And literally, folks, 15 minutes after getting in, the skies over my house, and it never rains at my house, the skies over my house opened. And it wasn't marble or golf ball size hail like it was last year that totally dented the hell out of my Lexus. I had to have it fixed and broke several windows in my house. It was more of the pea size, but it was just coming down so fast and so hard and shredding everything. I had to go out and look. And yes, once again, my garden has been shredded beyond recognition. But the good news is, it's early enough in the year that the plants will come back. The roots are fine. And I think it's early enough in the year that I'll be able to get a crop. Remember last year, Chris, it happened July 28th. It was either 26th or 28th. By time they started coming back, it was already getting well into September, and growing season was winding down. But this time of year, I do think they will come back. But it's was not a good trip. Well, it was a great trip, but not so great once I got home. But the mighty, manly, massive, and macho Maverick, which I have nicknamed my truck "MM" for short, it made it. It did well. It hung in there. It demands respect when anybody sees it. When any trucker sees it, they give room as this little Maverick makes its way through, and it hauled you know what, from Ohio to Colorado quite well. We'll see how it does pulling a trailer back to Ohio with some stuff that I will leave in my apartment building. And the Maverick will spend its life, if you will, in Ohio, but we'll see how that goes. But it was funny though. At one time, Chris, is just as I was getting into Illinois and crossing from Indiana into Illinois, I go from Ohio to Indiana to Illinois, and into Missouri, and then into Kansas, and then Colorado. And just as I was getting into Illinois, I was listening to satellite radio, and I was listening to the 70s, and Convoy from C.W. McCall comes on.
That's funny.
And there were a bunch of 18-wheelers, the big rigs, all around me. And it brought a tear to my eye. I'm listening to Convoy as my mighty, manly, massive, and macho Maverick is in between these three big rigs. And it was amazing, Chris. It's like the trucks, they all knew. They gave way. And my little Maverick, I felt like the 11 long-haired friends of Jesus in the Chartreuse microbus. If you're a fan of that song, you know what I'm talking about. And also in Illinois is where the Illinois National Guard was called out to try to stop this mighty convoy. So I figured, if it's good enough for 11 long-haired friends of Jesus in a Chartreuse microbus, it is perfectly good for a short-haired dude in a Ford Maverick to join this convoy. Now, granted, there's only three 18-wheel big
Well,
rigs,
it's got to start
but
somewhere.
we all drove together. It's like they would listen to satellite radio as well, listening to Convoy with C.W. McCall playing, and may he rest in peace. But I do find that funny that it happened just as I'm getting into Illinois, because as you know, the Illinois National Guard was called out to try to stop the convoy.
That's quite a story. The timing couldn't have been better.
Well, it doesn't rhyme as much to say, one short-haired dude in a mighty, manly, massive, macho Maverick. It doesn't rhyme as well as 11 long-haired friends of Jesus in a Chartreuse microbus. But I was kind of that odd little member of this convoy. I just wish there were more than three big rigs around me at the time. Like if there were 30, that would have been really cool.
That's great. Well, I'm glad you made it home safe with the new truck.
I am here, and I had the big test. Can it pull a 5x8 U-Haul trailer? all the way back to Ohio.
I bet it can.
It should.
Yeah.
It is a mighty, manly, massive, and macho maverick, otherwise known as for short. All righty. Well, folks, it's good to be back. This is the EDU show. We're going to continue with National Annuity Awareness Month and do some more discussions on annuities. Again, we're not trying to sell you annuities. And on this series of shows this year, I'm going to concentrate the really nerdy, deeper dives into some of the questions we've been receiving. But what I'm trying to do now is get you all to understand that annuities should not be loved universally. They should not be despised universally. You just need to understand that they are a tool that you can use perhaps for retirement planning. And that the people who speak against them, and it's justifiable. I don't want to say it's justifiable. To a degree, it's justifiable because especially 10, 20, 25 years ago, there were so many crappy, high-fee, worthless annuities being peddled and jammed down the throats of unsuspecting people. They developed a bad reputation, as well they should have. Mm-hmm. But there's so much misinformation now about them because of their very checkered past, but also because of the financial services industry itself. They, the financial services industry, cannot be paid if money goes into an annuity. They're not going to be able to manage it and get their AUM and their reoccurring revenue. So you have many investment advisory firms, especially those who are not registered also as brokers and therefore can sell brokered annuities. So they spend a lot of time trying to convince you you don't want an annuity. You just want to hire them and give them 1, 1.25, 1.5 or less, maybe 3/4, 8/10, whatever it is, whatever they happen to be charging you as their AUM fee. You're better off living on a safe withdrawal rate with one big portfolio and let them manage it for you. And they're just going to take a steady stream of income. And I like to point out that they do not like steady streams of lifetime guaranteed income if you are getting it from an annuity, but they love getting steady streams of lifetime guaranteed income from you as long as you're alive and still have your money with them. So I think a lot of the hatred of annuities stems from their very checkered past when they were lightly regulated and pushed heavily by questionable brokers and insurance agents. But now you're seeing a lot of the hatred being pushed by the financial services industry who want to earn their money managing your assets. So they have to encourage you not to put money into annuities. But now, especially over the past 3 or 4 years, a whole new crop of distribution in the annuity realm has come about where you don't have to just be a licensed insurance agent to sell a fixed annuity or a licensed insurance agent as well as a registered representative of a broker-dealer to sell a variable annuity. You can be an investment advisor representative of a registered investment advisory firm and offer annuities that are being distributed now on what is called the advisory platform, where a wholesaler actually puts you in the annuity and they have all the insurance licenses. The investment advisor representative of the registered investment advisory firm, they don't have anything. And sadly, they don't know what the hell they're doing. They probably don't know their you know what from their elbow when it comes to annuities. But what they do know is they can now earn their AUM fee on money inside an annuity, and all of a sudden, they're becoming in love with annuities as well, mostly on the fixed side and mostly with MYGAs, multi-year guaranteed annuities, especially when interest rates were going up quite a bit. MYGAs grew in popularity over the last couple of years. And to a lesser degree, you're starting to see some of these registered investment advisors who hated annuities for years, all of a sudden loving them because, again, on this distribution platform, they don't have to have any insurance licenses, but the IRS grants them the ability to debit their advisory fee from the annuity without that being considered a taxable distribution. And someone else, the wholesaler, is actually maintaining all the insurance licenses and putting them in the annuity. The advisor is just grabbing their advisory fee. Well, some of these annuities have living benefits. And I tried to explain last year the evolution of no benefits to death benefits to living benefits to try to appeal on the broker side who sell by commissions. But now you're having the same thing on the advisory side. And the advisor, they're the ones who are going to go out there and toot their horn saying, we're fiduciaries, we're fiduciaries, we're fiduciaries. That's when I say the advisory platform, they are fiduciaries. But as Chris and I point out all the time, that and a nickel won't buy you a cup of tea in China because you can't legislate morality. And yes, they're a fiduciary and they're supposed to do what's in your best interest. But the wholesaling firm that actually puts you in the annuity, actually recommends the annuity to use, and they actually receive a commission, they're not fiduciaries. They are insurance agents and registered reps of broker-dealers. They're not a fiduciary. The advisor is, but they're not. And they're the ones making the recommendation. And they're the ones putting you in the annuity, and they actually get paid the evil commission. I'm going to get deeper into that on the future show. But what I want you to understand is that annuities are constantly evolving in this love-hate relationship. And all the while, when Chris and I talk annuities, we're just talking about the little old single premium immediate annuity. Wait to the very last minute before you buy it to ensure you actually will need it. And try to get you to understand as a young retiree, and we may not feel young in our 50s and 60s and early 70s, but you're the youngest you're ever going to be today. There'll always be an older you tomorrow. When there's no longer an older you, there's no longer a you. We firmly believe in single premium immediate annuities. We firmly believe they should not be purchased until the older you absolutely needs them. I feel the younger you, your responsibility, if you believe in our approach to retirement planning, is to understand enough about annuities that as you age, you'll be able to make a clearer decision, and that you reserve enough money from your fund reserve enough money to cover the needed annuity later in life. That's your responsibility as a young retiree. So when Chris and I talk annuities, we're generally talking single premium immediate annuities. When the industry talks annuities, they are generally talking fixed indexed annuities and now registered index linked annuities with living benefits. The old brokers, the registered reps of a broker-dealer, the non-fiduciaries, those who have to act in your quote-unquote best interest, that side of the distribution world, they love variable annuities and RILAs with living benefits. They might even love, to a lesser extent, MYGAs. On the advisory side, if you have a fiduciary advisor, and if you could see me, I'd be holding air quotes under that word. That is the most bastardized, sales-orientated, overused word today is fiduciary. just like holistic financial plan was about 7 or 8 years ago, and wealth advisor was about a decade to 12 years ago. My industry always comes up with these new terms, and they try to turn it into some marketing gimmick. Now it's fiduciary. Well, on the fiduciary side, they really like VAs and RILAs with these living benefits because they can provide the income stream that they couldn't do before. Now they can do it, but they can also charge their advisory fee on it. And they love that. They can have their cake and eat it too. They can finally give their clients a lifetime stream of guaranteed income they cannot outlive. And they, at least until the annuity reaches zero, can continue charging their advisory fee. And they can also leave the brokerage world if they grew up at a wirehouse or an independent brokerage where they maintained a registered rep designation. They can now leave that world and take all those old annuities that they might have sold and move them to advisory annuities, ostensibly in your quote-unquote best interest as fiduciaries, has nothing to do with the fact that they can continue earning money on them, because when they leave the brokerage world and go to the advisory world, they cannot earn money on those annuities anymore unless they move them to the advisory world. Then they can start charging on them again. And magically, they always find reasons to move the old annuities, which were perfectly good to buy years ago, but now are not good anymore. But now they can move you into advisory annuities. I'm just sharing how my industry works so you guys can understand if people are recommending these annuities, you can at least question in the back of your mind, is this truly in my best interest or is this truly a fiduciary recommendation? Or is it so they can make some money off of me? You really need to be asking that. When we talk annuities on the show or with our clients, it's generally never in those realms. Although I do feel some of those living benefit riders at certain times are even better than SPIAs, but you should look at both. Okay. Today, I want to talk about fixed indexed annuities and RILAs because those are the two most common annuities that you will find these living benefit riders. So you need to understand how these annuities work, and that's what I hope to cover today. Next week, I'm going to dive into the living benefit riders themselves and all the gimmicks associated with them that you have to kind of know, or questions at least that you should be asking. So today, let me talk about what a fixed indexed annuity is and what a RILA is. Once you understand that, then you'll have a better understanding of how the living benefit, which is the income benefit that you can receive from these annuities. So far, so good, Chris, or do you have any questions popping into your head, which would therefore lead our listeners to probably have questions?
No, I think the takeaway from your, I'll call it intro, is if someone is encouraging you to move from one annuity to another, make sure that it is very clear. You very clearly understand what you're giving up, what you're getting with this new thing, and the reasons behind the move.
And what they're getting.
Well, I will, in their defense, just because they're getting something doesn't mean it's not a good idea, right? They're
No, but
doing
you should
a job.
Know.
You should know.
What are you getting? What are you going to earn off of this? Are you getting an advisory fee? Are you getting a commission? Mm-hmm. What's your commission? You need to know what they're getting.
Yeah, I think for full transparency, that would be the route I would go. But if everything is better about what you're moving to and you love it, you know, just because they're going to make a few dollars or maybe a lot of dollars, if it ultimately benefits you, maybe it is, but you always have to remember, if they're making a bunch of dollars, that's coming from somewhere, right? That's coming from somewhere. And maybe there's still enough left over for you that it makes sense, right? But that would, I would be tempted to shop around a little more, because if they're moving you into something and making a ton of dollars, there might be something even better for you where the seller of that thing isn't making as much money because more benefits are passing to you. So it's a good alarm bell or a red flag to look for that might encourage you to investigate a little bit more before you take the jump from one to another.
Yeah, we'll be able to on one of the EDU shows. I received a question from a gentleman who is being proposed a annuity with a living benefit rider, mm-hmm. and he wants, it's a variable annuity. And he asked some very good questions and sent me some illustrations, and I will most likely answer his questions on a podcast. I think his situation would be a good learning experience to dive into that, of whether or not this truly is a good thing or not. And I can see, Chris, there are some advisors out there who definitely are going to move people to an annuity because it truly is better. But the cynic in me says there's a lot who don't want to leave the old brokerage world, the registered rep, I'm a broker earning a commission world. They don't want to fully break away from that because they have a ton of variable annuities. They don't have a ton of RILAs because RILAs are relatively new. And they don't have a lot of fixed index annuities. Well, they may. I don't want to say they don't. But they sold annuities in the past with living benefit riders and got people into them. Now, all of a sudden, they're hitting them with, and I've listened to recordings of people sharing how they move from one realm, from the registered rep world, and how they move to the RIA advisory world and could charge a fee instead of earning a commission. And it all revolves around, I could move all my money with me. I could move these annuities. I had reasons to move the annuities. I could continue making my money. And that just rubs me the wrong way. I'm sorry, it does. If it was good for your client then, and you and I have seen this, and I don't want to get too deep into the weeds here, but the income benefit had grown to such a level, I find it hard to believe that a new annuity is going mm-hmm. to be able to beat it.
Right.
And I have seen questionable moves. Let's just leave it at that. But I've also seen some very justifiable moves. But that's a hard decision, a hard conversation for an advisor to have. Yeah, the annuity I put you in years ago, it's crap.
Yeah.
But I loved it then. But this one, so much better. It's a hard conversation to have with someone. What the hell did you put me in a crap one for then? So that's what makes my industry bad. It's all the desire to get a piece of your money for the rest of their working lives. And another big part of my industry is second and third generation. What you can do to keep those assets after your client dies. And there's seminars dedicated to that. There's annuity providers dedicated to getting people to set limits on the annuities to kind of force the beneficiaries to stay in annuities so you can continue with the second and third generation as well. There's so much of that in my industry. It just gives me a bad taste in my mouth. It truly does. It disgusts me how my industry is just all about gaining assets and taking a little bit from everyone. And as I will get into when I answer this gentleman's question, not quite sure he understands what he's going to be paying for in that annuity. And if the fee is truly worth what the annuity is going to allow him to do. That's about all I want to give, because I know he's listening. I don't want to get too deep into it. All right. So let's get into what is a fixed index annuity and what is a RILA, because these are the two that you are most likely going to hear about the most. Insurance agents, those who do not have a brokerage license, so they cannot sell a RILA or a variable annuity, or they do not have a Series 65, which allows them to become a quote-unquote fiduciary advisor and charge a fee. So an insurance agent only, they can just sell fixed annuities. So that would be a SPIA, single premium immediate annuity, a DIA, deferred income annuity, or as I try teaching you, a DA, a deferred annuity. And every annuity theoretically is a deferred annuity, but not every deferred annuity is a deferred income annuity. And a couple of weeks ago, we talked about that, so I won't get into that again. The fixed indexed annuity realm allows an insurance-only agent to kind of sell an investment. Now, legally speaking and regulatorily speaking, it's not an investment because you cannot lose in it. But they often talk about it with investment-like terms. They often break their own rules by recommending you move 401ks or IRAs over into it. 401ks and IRAs that are invested. And by default, they're recommending you sell investments and move them to a fixed indexed annuity or a fixed annuity. That's investment advice in the eyes of the SEC. I'm sorry, it is, and they are not allowed to do that. But they do it all the time. Nobody pays attention. It's kind of like Colorado, where they legalize dope. You go to a concert at Red Rocks, everybody and their uncle is lit up and smoking dope there. They're not supposed to. Smoking outside is against law, but everybody does it. And nobody questions it. And none of the regulators, ergo cops, say anything about it. It's the same thing in the annuity world. An insurance-only agent cannot say, move your IRA to me, move your 401k to me, if that IRA and or 401k is invested, because they are making a recommendation to sell investments and they are not licensed to do that. And you, if you're an insurance-only agent, don't like me saying this, and maybe you don't even know that that's the truth, and don't write to me disputing it, because I know it is the truth. You're not supposed to do it, but just like everybody smoking dope outside at Red Rocks, nobody's questioning it, and you guys do it all the time. Conversely, in my industry, fiduciary advisors who have no insurance license and never had an insurance license are not supposed to be talking insurance products, should not even be talking about annuities, how they work, their provisions, naming specific annuities, describing specific annuities, but they do all the time as well, especially those who are going to now charge their asset management fee on them. It's supposed to be the wholesaler who does all that because the advisor has no insurance license. Right. Again, very gray area. And if you Google that, advisors, there's a couple of law firms out there who have some wonderful blog posts talking deeply about that and how advisors have to be careful. And they, too, are crossing a line. You got to watch out for that. My point is, in our industry, listeners, people cross the lines all the time between what they should and shouldn't do. But insurance-only agents, and there's nothing against them, they can only sell, though, fixed annuities, because a fixed annuity is not an investment, even one that's indexed to a stock market index. And that agent has no right. They're not supposed to talk about the index, how the index works, or investments, because they're not licensed to, but they do all the time. The SEC tried to take over the regulation of fixed indexed annuities and were defeated by Harkin out of Iowa. No surprise there. Iowa is a big annuity state, big insurance state. And he forever prevented the SEC from regulating fixed indexed annuities. Where the SEC is going after fixed indexed annuities is on the RIA space, with investment advisor representatives, fiduciary advisors, who are recommending annuities. And if you are an advisor and you're recommending annuities, familiarize yourself, because sooner or later you will be examined by the SEC. And that's where they're going deep, is after them. But it's the wild, wild west, folks, on fixed annuities by advisors who are only insurance regulated because no one's checking in on them. And it's sad, and I'm pissed that Harkin put that in there, because I personally do feel that a fixed indexed annuity should be regulated as a security. If for any reason, because you are going to be talking and providing advice on what these various indexes are, what they're comprised of, what equities make up the index, you should be talking about all that. They don't. They probably don't even understand the indexes because they're not licensed to sell any of that. So you can tell I'm quite upset over all this, but I'm just spitting in the wind because no one listens, no one pays attention. But you guys need to know this. You need to know if you're working with an insurance agent, they likely have no investment experience. Okay. So how do fixed indexed annuities work? At their most simple level, they are the equivalent, and they came out first, but they are the equivalent to the 100% buffered exchange traded funds that we started talking about last year or the year before. I forget when we started talking about them. You cannot lose on the downside. Your upside is capped. You participate in the price change of an index only. You generally don't receive any dividends from the index. So they operate very, very similar to that. However, the 100% buffered ETFs were Wall Street's answer to fixed indexed annuities. RILAs were the insurance company's answer to structured notes and the buffered products that have a 10, 20, or 30% buffer, and I'll get into that later. So back to a traditional fixed annuity. When you hear the word fixed in an annuity, in the name, a couple of things to remember. Inside a fixed annuity, your principal is 100% protected. That is one of the insurance elements. We said there are two insurance elements, lifetime stream of guaranteed income or 100% principal protection. Those are the two main insurance elements that you are purchasing when you buy an annuity, especially a fixed annuity. So inside a fixed annuity, your principal is protected. We talked last time about a traditional fixed annuity that used to set the interest rates for 1 year. You would buy it. You still might have to hold it for 5, 7, or 10 years, but the insurance company would only tell you in year one what your interest rate was. Year two, you had to wait, and they would come out with a declared interest rate again and tell you what your subsequent interest rate would be for year two, and then year three, and then year four. And those were a hard sell at times to people because nobody wanted to lock their money up for 5, 7, or 10 years and not know what they're going to be able to get in year 2, 3, 4, 5, so on and so forth. But that's how a traditional fixed annuity first came out. Then the insurance company said, well, we'll just give a guaranteed interest rate for multiple years. And hence, MYGAs were born, multi-year guaranteed annuity, MYGA. Which are a fixed annuity, but they pay a set interest rate for a certain number of years. Very similar to CDs with no FDIC insurance whatsoever. So that, too, is a fixed annuity. Keep in mind, when you hear the word fixed annuity, they are what is called a general account product. Chris, do you know what that means? I know you don't do insurance in the office, but I'm just curious. Have you ever heard that? They're a general account product?
Yes, only in the sense that the dollars that are there aren't sequestered off to the side and technically owned by you. They are funds that are mixed in what's called the general account of the insurance company, subject to the obligations that insurance company might have to others, other creditors, etc.
Excellent. Chris is 100% right. When you buy a fixed annuity, whether that's a SPIA, a DIA, a MYGA, a traditional fixed, or a fixed indexed annuity, your money is not yours. You'll get an account statement, but unlike a variable annuity that has sequestered your assets off to the side, and it is not an asset of the insurance company, under a fixed annuity, your money is an asset of the insurance company. And if the insurance company goes under, you can lose your money, literally all of it. Now, there's protections built in, so don't stop panicking. That's not my intent. But theoretically or academically speaking, yes, you could lose all your money if the insurance company went belly up. Few insurance companies will go belly up, but that's just in the past. Going forward, I think you might see some. But there are the state guarantee accounts that are set up to help protect people from insurance companies going belly up. And do keep in mind, if an insurance company goes belly up because they are, at least on paper, insolvent, they have more liabilities than assets. There are many steps that the state regulators will do to liquidate the assets that are held, pay off debt holders. They often sell annuity books of business to stronger carriers. So they do a lot to protect you. I'm not saying it's nothing to fear, but do not stop panicking over it yet. There might be an issue over the next 30 years when global debt markets blow up everywhere, not just at insurance companies. But that's a conversation that's for another time. But it's important to know they are a general account obligation, meaning your money, while the insurance company has it in a fixed annuity, they'll give you a statement that just shows you your claim, if you will, against their general account. But they're not literally holding your money off to the side in a separate account, sequestered away from their liabilities. Your money becomes their asset. Now, when your annuity matures, in the case of a MIGA, and you get your money back and you take it, now it's yours again. But while it's at the insurance company, it is an asset of the insurance company. That's one reason with SPIAs, single premium immediate annuities. When we are doing a lifetime stream of guaranteed income, we prefer on a SPIA an A++ rated carrier. A carrier that hopefully we're not going to have to worry about for the rest of the life of our client. A carrier that will be big enough or financially sound enough that even if the shit hits the fan in the future, they should be able to weather through the storm. Now, there's never a guarantee with anything, but I would rather it be with a strong, strong carrier, a 100-plus-year-old carrier, carrier that maybe is mutually owned, or if it's stock-owned, that it still puts shareholders first over stockholders. And there's only a handful of carriers that fall into these categories, but they are out there. So it's important to understand the general account concept of a fixed annuity. Okay, so what's a fixed indexed annuity? Fixed indexed annuity was the insurance company's attempt to keep people from investing their damn money with agents and advisors and brokers and instead keep it in the insurance realm. So here's essentially how they do it or what they do. Inside a fixed annuity, especially a MIGA, multi-year guaranteed annuity, they have agreed to give you a certain amount of interest for a certain number of years, 3 years, 5 years, 7 years, 10 years. Those are the more common MIGAs, time periods. Although you can pretty much get a MIGA for two. Although there is one company that I know of that offers a one-year MIGA, which I think you're stupid if you buy a one-year MIGA. So theoretically, from 1 to 15 or so years, you can get a multi-year guaranteed annuity. But the most common is 3, 5, 7, or 10-year periods. And inside that traditional MIGA, the insurance company has agreed to give you a certain amount of interest every year. Now, that insurance company feels fairly confident that they are going to not only pay you some of that interest, they're going to be able to earn more on your money. Because remember, your money, while it's at the insurance company on a fixed annuity, is their money. And their bond team, insurance companies, are some of the most astute and knowledgeable bond traders in the world because they predominantly own bonds. Now, whole other story with these private equity-owned insurance companies now. That's a subject for another day. But a traditional insurance company predominantly invests in bonds. They feel they're going to be able to earn more. So these annuities don't have any outward fees. Chris, does that mean people aren't paying anything? How's the insurance company making money?
Well, it's hidden, whether it's on purpose or just a function of how these are built. But essentially, they make money by the difference between what they have taken your money and invested it in their earning versus what they're giving to you. Essentially, a form of a spread, we would call it.
Exactly. So in the industry, believe it or not, this is the industry parlance, the fee is baked in. I don't know who came. I don't even know if, is that an academic term? Or is that just industry verbiage that kind of survived? We just say the fee is baked in. When you see a MIGA, let's say a MIGA is going to pay 5%. Let's just use the round number for 5 years. It's going to pay 5% for 5 years. The fee is baked in. What insurance companies don't have to do, and again, I fault the regulators who are being paid off by the insurance industry who contributes to politicians, and the politicians put the pressure on the regulators, because the regulators could easily pass a rule, you must state your anticipated, you know, gross return and what you're going to give the person or whatever, and make your math work available to those requesting it or something like that. They never will. So you don't know truly what you're paying. Insurance agents love this because they say, you don't pay anything, the insurance company pays me. I can't stand that. You are paying. The fee is baked in. What you don't know is how much. Is the insurance company assuming they're going to make 7% over the next 5 years? They're keeping 2 and giving you 5? Well, there's your fee, 200 basis points. Or are they anticipating they're going to make 5.3? They're keeping 30 basis points and you're getting 5. Hey, that's not too bad. They're being really nice. They don't have to disclose that, but that's the fee. The fee is baked in to the interest rate you're going to receive, unlike buffered ETFs, which are regulated by the SEC under the 1940 Securities Act, totally different. They have to disclose all fees, baked in or not.
Right.
Insurance companies do not. So you have no idea what you're paying, but you are paying. Okay. So here's what insurance companies essentially do. Some do it slightly different. I want to keep this simple. Rather than giving you 5%, they already assume they're going to get 5% a year. They said brilliantly, because they were trying to compete against mutual funds, to a lesser degree ETFs. When FIAs first came out, ETFs had not caught on like they have now. Buffered ETFs did not exist, but structured products by banks did exist. We're going to be talking about structured products in the not too distant future. And I'm excited because I'm going to be bringing on an expert in structured products. So I'm not going to get into what they are now. But structured products use, they're issued by banks, similar to insurance. The asset is the bank's. And if the bank goes under, you could lose your money during the period that the bank has it. They can offer 100% principal protection or degree of loss, very similar to buffered products. But the fee is baked in, just like it is on insurance companies, and no banks do not disclose you what their gross interest rate is. Insurance companies wanted to compete against mutual funds, to a lesser degree ETFs, but they looked at what banks were doing with structured products and said to themselves, hey, we can do that same thing. Why give someone 5% interest? Why don't we tell them the worst they're going to get is nothing? We take the 5% a year interest and we buy options with it, options on various indexes. And with those options, we can give them a bit of the return of that index. if we structure the options correctly with a deep in the money put and all this other stuff that Calamo spoke to us about, if we structure them properly, we can give them 100% principal protection and some of the upside with the interest that we normally would have been giving them under a MYGA. That's essentially what they're doing, folks. It's not rocket science. It's options trades. And the fixed indexed annuity realm was born. And unfortunately, it's become bastardized. And there's a lot about the industry I don't like now. But at its face value, that's what they're doing. They're taking the interest that they would have normally given you in a traditional MYGA, because these are still fixed products. You cannot lose in them. You will have 100% principal protection. And they're just taking the interest and structuring options trades similar to what banks did with structured notes for eons and what Wall Street has recently started to do over the past 5-6 years with buffered ETFs. It's options trading, folks. And banks have some of the best bond traders in existence. They now have some of the best options traders. I'll give them credit. They do. Insurance companies know what they're doing on that. And that's how they do it. So very similar, you put money into a fixed indexed annuity. You have to buy it for a set term of years. Three, not so much on fixed indexed annuities. 5, 7, and 10. Those are the big time periods that fixed indexed annuities are sold by. The most common, 10, which is the one I hate the most because you have to lock your money up for a very long time. But because you lock your money up for a long time, as we spoke about last week, Chris, the fixed indexed annuities generally have higher or lower cap rates than buffered ETFs.
They usually have lower cap rates.
The buffered ETFs have lower. Yes. Say yes. Just agree with me.
Yes.
Because you lock your money up in a fixed indexed annuity, you have to have that liquidity premium. So an insurance company can't pay less than what a buffered ETF would pay. Who the hell would buy the fixed indexed annuity and lock their money up for 10 years if you can get a higher cap rate outside of the annuity? So they do offer higher cap rates. I will give kudos to the industry that they don't use them as teaser rates. You don't get an initial cap rate, and then the very next year they drop it to the contractual minimum, which you should know. When you buy a fixed indexed annuity, what the contractual minimum cap rate can be, you should ask that question. Because I have seen cap rates drop to those levels. Not right away, but I have seen them drop. Now, when they did drop, it was when interest rates were cratering. The insurance company had no choice. I don't fault them. But what really, I'll say it, pissed me off with the industry is when interest rates were dropping all the way down to below one, yes, their cap rates were dropping to the contractual minimums or just slightly above. But when interest rates rebounded and brand new fixed indexed annuities from the same provider were paying significantly higher cap rates than just a few years earlier, they were not raising the cap rates on existing fixed indexed annuities. Yeah. That might have had a cap rate when you first bought it. It wouldn't have been 9, 10, 11%, not back then, but it would have been 5, 6%, maybe 4, 5, 6%. And when interest rates were down at 2 or 3 and eventually dropped to below 1, that was still a pretty good cap rate on a 100% principal protected product. But I watched those cap rates drop. Mm-hmm. And I had people in those, not from me, but from other advisors. And I watched as their cap rates dropped. And I just assumed, oh, they should start going up. And they didn't. That ticks me off. You lowered them, but you didn't raise them, even though a new annuity from you had higher cap rates. I had a discussion with a carrier on that, on why they do that. And they got an actuary on the phone with me. I couldn't understand what the hell this guy was speaking English. I had no idea what the hell he was saying. Sounded like smoke and mirrors to me, I told him. I was just pissed. I had no product with them. I just wanted to know why they did this. I'm sure there's a reason. I just have not been told a good reason. If your cap rate originally was 4, 5, or 6, and you dropped it down to 1 or 2, I fully understand. You can't get stones from blood from rocks. You can't get blood from a rock, right? A stone, right? Yeah. I said it right, right? Yeah. Did I help me out here, Chris?
You're basically in the right vicinity, yeah.
Nailed it. All right. I get it. You can't pay more than 2% or 1% or 1.5 or 2 cap rate when interest rates were below 1. But if you originally sold that product when it was paying 4, 5, or 6, and then interest rates went screaming in 2022, and your new products and you're touting this in marketing materials are paying 8, 9, 10, 11% cap rates, and you're still keeping these people at 1 or 2 and not even at least raising it to the 4, 5, or 6 that it originally was at, and now interest rates were higher than when they bought it, that left a bad taste in my mouth. Anyways, I digress. Understand, when you buy these fixed indexed annuities, your money is locked into that annuity for 5, 7, or 10 years. Those are the most common. And they have the right to lower them to the contractual minimum inside that policy. I have seen them go down, and justifiably, what left a bad taste in my mouth is they didn't raise them nearly as quick or quick at all. And I can't seem to get a straight answer. Now, some carriers, I don't want to name who they are, have come out with a unique product, and they will say, again, I've only seen them on the 5-year realm. I doubt you're ever going to see this on a 10-year. You might see it on a 3-year, where they will guarantee the cap rate for a certain number of years. I think in response to what I just shared with you and the bad press and the bad feeling it left with people or with advisors, that's really who they're trying to placate, is the advisors, because the advisor who put the people in those annuities have to deal with a pissed off client. So to win those advisors back, or investment managers back, or insurance agents in the case of fixed annuities back, they say, hey, we guarantee this cap rate. Now, the cap rate will be lower than the non-guaranteed ones, justifiably. The insurance company has to protect themselves. But if I was contemplating a fixed indexed annuity, I would ask whoever is recommending it to you, does this carrier have a guaranteed cap rate option, and compare it? And if the carrier in question doesn't, ask the agent, hey, I also want to see a product comparable from a carrier that will guarantee the cap rate for the same term if it exists. I doubt you're ever going to see it on a 10-year one, because that's a lot of risk to the insurance company. I'm surprised they put it on a 5-year realm. But just think of the risk, Chris, that the insurance company is carrying. A lot can happen in that 5-year time period that causes interest rates to crash, and the insurance company has to pay that guaranteed cap rate. So I think you would agree there's a lot of risk there, but I think they're trying to address that issue I just described. Anything you want to add?
No, I think the insurance product world is all about that, where issues come up and then they come up with a new product that tries to deal with it, because they're always battling the, you know, the public's perception of their products. And as the public might sour on something because of a bad experience, they usually try to come up with a way to fix that or address that. So it's pretty common to see things in the insurance world evolve like this.
Okay. When would you use a fixed indexed annuity? When you want 100% principal protection. Do not compare these to a uncapped no risk hedging investment. And it ticks me off that the industry does constantly, the industry being the financial services industry, not necessarily the insurance industry, especially reporters. Reporters sometimes go to school for journalism, obviously, and they just happen to get a job at a financial services place and they start doing their own research and they get bad opinions or research and they keep pushing the same tired story that somehow a fixed indexed annuity should be compared to an uncapped investment in the S&P 500, one of the more common indexes you can index to. And I disagree wholeheartedly. The amount you're going to lose in a fixed indexed annuity, assuming the insurance company does not go bust, the amount you can lose is zero. So it should be compared to a money market account, maybe one of those ETFs that invest in the 1 to 3 month treasury bill, T-bill ladder. But I think a money market account, a bank account, a CD, anything else that is 100% principal protected. That's what this product should be compared to. Not an investment. You want an investment, buy an investment. I think sometimes my industry, financial services industry, bashes these annuities. Say, well, you'd be better off just buying the S&P. No, you wouldn't if you want a degree of principal protection. Compare them. Do the same analysis to a money market account or the T-bill accounts. I told you, Vanguard has them. Fidelity has one. BlackRock has one. So many providers now have these ETFs tied to a 1 to 3 month treasury bill ladder. And I think Jacob said when he was on, the fee was 0.07 basis points. It's dirt cheap. It's the treasury bill, 1 to 3 month ladder, all done right within the ETF. It should be compared to that or a money market or a bank account, not to the S&P. It should also be compared perhaps to a MYGA, because that's essentially what you have, minus the guaranteed interest.
Yeah, you have a MYGA with an unknown interest crediting because it's tied to an index instead of an upfront promise.
Right. And if the index does well for the 5 years and the cap rate's at 7, 8, 9, 10 and maintains renewal cap rate, remember, every year the cap rate will change. So what's better, a MYGA paying 5% every year or a fixed indexed annuity for 5 years tied to an index, let's say the S&P 500, tied to the S&P 500 index, price change only, no dividends. You all know this if you listen to the Buffett ETF show. No dividends, price change only. Is potentially earning 8, 9, 10%, not every year, but some years, better than getting 5% steady for 5 years? I don't know. That's something you might have to think of. Maybe it shouldn't be an all or nothing. Maybe you should do the King Solomon approach. If you were going to put $200,000 in a fixed indexed annuity, making this number up, why don't you put half in a MYGA and half in a fixed indexed annuity? They're both the same style annuity doing the same thing. But as Chris rightly pointed out, you're foregoing that, I'm using hypothetical 5% interest rate, you're foregoing that 5% for 5 years for the potential to earn 8, 9, 10% in any given year. And at the end of 5 years, you're all but certain to win in the sense one of them was the right one to purchase 5 years earlier. You're going to have half your money in one and half your money in the other. It doesn't have to be all or nothing, because depending, a couple of years of zero will totally wipe out a year or two at 8 or 9%. Keep that in mind. So it's a tough call on what's the better option. So again, they should only be compared to, I don't want to say investments per se, but to products that offer 100% principal protection. And when you look at it that way, the potential cap rates are pretty good. But so are the interest rates of MIGAs. And what's better, a bird in the bush or two in the hand? Getting 5%, again, in my hypothetical example, steady every year for 5 years, and assuming you need the money in the fifth year and you want that money, or owning a fixed indexed annuity. Now, I'll tell you what your advisor will want you in, the fixed indexed annuity. Why? It commissions a hell of a lot more than a MIGA. Hell of a lot more. Now, that could be an incentive, especially on a non-fiduciary. No insurance agent is a fiduciary. They're only a fiduciary to the insurance company. They may, because of the NAIC, have to operate under the regulation best interest, which just muddies the water when they say, yes, we have to operate under the regulation best interest, but they're not a fiduciary to you. They're a fiduciary to the insurance company. My point with this little tirade bit is they may very well feel the fixed indexed annuity is in your best interest, but they don't necessarily have to disclose that they're going to get a boatload of more commission out of a FIA than they will a MIGA. But now you know. So if they downplay a MIGA, ask them why. Well, you could get the cap rate. Here's 9. The MIGA's only paying 5. But that's only if the S&P earns at least 9. What if the S&P is up 3? You just get 3. Price change only. Up 3, you get 3. The MIGA, you get 5. Everybody knows the S&P is up 18, you get 9. No big deal. It's a 100% risk-free investment. That year of 9 just wiped free any other safe investment. But 1 year of 0 in those 5 years, that 9 all of a sudden becomes 4.5. The 5 would have been better. So it's really tough to tell you today what's the best thing for the next 5 years. Maybe if you truly like the potential to get to forego your interest. Now you know what the insurance company's doing. They're selling you a MIGA, keeping the interest, and indexing it with options and giving you whatever they can earn minus their take, which they don't have to tell you what that is, and you'll get the difference as the cap rate. I don't know what the better option is, the MIGA or the FIA. Maybe you should do a little bit in both. All right, enough of that. Anything you want to add or clarify for me or question me on?
No, I'll just call out to those who are listening carefully that, yes, I did pick up on, he said it backwards, a bird in the hand or two in the bush, which is the correct way. So I just wanted to acknowledge that. But he was in
flux. I did not say that wrong.
You did say it. You said opposite. Two in the hand or one in the bush. That's the opposite. So it's okay. I just didn't want to make sure. I wanted to make sure people didn't think I was sleeping on the job here. It's fine. Mm-hmm. People knew what you meant, and it wasn't. I didn't interrupt you, as you noticed.
Thank you.
But you asked for input, and that was my input.
Well, I meant input on fixed indexed annuities, not birds and bushes and hands.
No, I think they. I think that maybe the only thing to touch on is just reinforce. Then, now that everyone knows how they behave, how do they work? Where you would use them? You'd use them when you're looking for principal protection. But you want the possibility of an index-linked return with limits, if that's attractive to you. I think if you're not really that interested in the principal protection piece, you're giving up a lot of potential by having that feature. So if that's not a feature of interest to you, then that's probably a signal this is not a great product for your situation. But if you're looking for that kind of that twofold, principal protection plus, you know, a variable return with, you know, an index influence on it, if that fits your need for what you're trying to do, might be worth considering.
Absolutely. And that's key. If you buy a fixed indexed annuity or a MIGA, it should be because you want 100% principal protection. I know in our practice, if we use them, we don't use FIAs anymore. I used to, in full disclosure, use FIAs in the past when interest rates were so low. It's the only thing I could do on safe money. I haven't used an FIA, gosh, over a decade. It just it's we don't do it now, especially now that buffered products have come out on the ETF side. So I may say I'm negative on them to a degree, and let's share some of the positives and negatives then on fixed indexed annuities, since that's the logical next step. Where do we or would we recommend? You would use a fixed indexed annuity in lieu of a MYGA if you want that 100% principal protection. You should time the penalty phase, the period of time where the annuity is technically illiquid, in the sense you can close it at any time. It's just that you're going to pay a hell of a big penalty if you close it and take your money out before you let the penalty period expire. Most will start upwards of 8 or 9%. And that's because they commissioned the agent who sold it to you, probably anywhere between 5 and 7, with the typical being around 6. There's been a lot of premium specials where I've seen the commissions as high as 8 lately. So, you know, you're putting in $100,000, $200,000, $300,000. Your advisor is going to be walking away with $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 per 100 grand. So you can see the pressure to get them in that. A MYGA, on the other hand, I don't know what a commission MYGA pays because we use mostly fee-based MYGAs that don't pay me anything. But occasionally we have to use a commission one for a variety of reasons. I'm hesitant to say, but I believe it's about 1.5 to 2.5%, maybe 3, the highest. It's more than a SPIA. The lowest I ever received on a SPIA was either 50 basis points or 80 basis points, I forget. The highest was 3%, and that was a recent one. The SPIAs generally fall around 1 to 1.5, but with interest rates higher, clearly, the companies are commissioning more, and when interest rates were lower, they paid hardly nothing. And it's just the way it is. The SPIAs are not designed to pay a hell of a lot of money. Neither are MYGAs. MYGAs are not designed to pay a hell of a lot of money. Well, how can FIAs commission so much more? Because the way the yield spread's going to work, the insurance company gets to keep some of the upside potential. They don't have to disclose it to you. They get to keep some of the interest spread, and they get to keep some of the yield spread. And even though on structured products, which again are offered by banks, as I was doing my due diligence and research on structured products, I asked a representative of one of the banks, I will not mention the bank, do the banks take the opposite side of the structured trade? I was curious to see what they would say, because that to me would be a little disingenuous. They're going to do two sides of the options trades, take both sides. They could make money coming or going. And this particular bank rep said, no, their bank does not do that. They felt it would be unethical. I don't know if the insurance companies take both sides of the options trades. It's an insurance company. Who knows what they're doing? So I do know they commission far more. And keep that in mind. That's not a reason not to buy. I don't know if that makes sense. Not. Don't use that as a reason not to buy, but use that as an understanding of why an agent may really be pushing it hard. And it's, again, one of the reasons why private equity companies are buying insurance companies left and right. And they love fixed indexed annuities because they can make money on both sides of the options trades. They can make money off of the yield spread. And then they can take a lot of the premium money and also put it in products that they create, collateralized debt obligations and all this other private equity and private debt stuff behind the scenes. Everything that Tom Gober tried warning people on, and I used to mention a lot about Mr. Gober. Unfortunately, the company that he tried founding, the TSR ratio, sadly had to close down. But I think that's more of a reflection of the industry successfully closed down someone who was screaming blue murder on what they're doing. And it taught me a lot, at least in the year and a half that I would read what Mr. Goldberg was saying. Okay, so you would use these where you want 100% principal protection. Do not compare them to an investment. They're not an investment. Recognize an FIA commissions a hell of a lot more, so it might be one of the reasons why you will be pushed heavily into them. And it might be a reason why MIGA is a downplay. They will not make as much of a commission off of a MIGA. But I do feel the two of them, since they're kissing cousins, might be best owned in conjunction with each other, but that's something you will have to decide on your own. A couple of other things. When you have your money in these annuities, the money is locked up. You will always be taxed as income. You are creating IRD, income with respect to a decedent. So there'll be no step up in basis. There'll be no long-term capital gains on them. They will always be taxed as income. So when you get your interest credit, as long as the money stays inside the annuity, you do not have to pay taxes on it. But when you close the annuity, you will pay taxes on it. So just keep that in mind. But it is interest. A MIGA is outward interest, and a fixed indexed annuity is interest indexed to a market benchmark or market index. But it is interest. Unlike a buffered ETF, which if you hold it for more than 1 year, the price change is not considered interest. The price change is considered a capital gain. So if you sell a buffered product, you will owe capital gains taxes. When you sell a fixed indexed annuity, you will owe us close the fixed indexed annuity. You will owe income taxes. However, since I've already said that they should be compared to low-risk investments, most low-risk investments also pay interest that's taxed as income. So I'm not trying to say that that's a negative. It's a negative against a buffered ETF, but it's not a negative dig against the annuities themselves. Because here I am telling you, you should compare them to laddered three-month T-bill ETFs or money market accounts or CDs or any other type of 100% principal protected product. It generally is a interest-bearing product that will be taxed as income. So just want to keep that in mind. I don't want to say it's a full negative, but it is something to consider. So besides the illiquidity during the 5, 7, or 10-year period, they're going to be taxed as income. But even if you put it in a money market account, it would have been taxed as income. At least inside the annuity, it will not be taxed as income until you take the money out, but your money market account would have been taxed as income every year. Whether or not that is good or bad is hard to say. For some people, they probably would have been better off paying taxes a little every year. Right. Maybe they wouldn't have had to pay any taxes on it, as opposed to everything all at once. And for other people, it would have been better off to delay the taxes inside the annuity for as long as possible and then pay it. So that's really a personal thing. It's going to depend if it's a good or bad issue.
Yeah.
Anything you want to add on any of those items?
No, I think those are all features or characteristics of these things that people should know ahead of time.
My final caveat is a warning. Be very careful on proprietary indexes inside fixed indexed annuities. I hate them with a passion. And they are often touted as being quote unquote uncapped. I have this uncapped option. You can have the XYZ 7% volatility growth index sponsored by this company. What the hell is it? If you actually start researching them, and I did on one index, started researching it in Florida. I don't have everything in front of me. I'll try to talk about it on some future show. Maybe not necessarily during Nudi Awareness Month, but when I start answering questions. So I took one of these indexes. What I did, I came across an article, I got an email from, and I let insurance wholesalers contact me constantly because I like to see the crap they're pushing. And I got this email pushing this uncapped option inside a fixed indexed annuity. So I clicked on the link knowing full well I was going to get contacted. But I did get information on the fixed indexed annuity and the custom benchmark and who it was created by. And I decided in Florida in February, I'm going to start researching this. So with the deep research capability of ChatGPT, I have the Plus subscription, the $200 a month one, and it gives me an unlimited, well, nearly unlimited deep search capabilities. I dug into that benchmark deeper than ever. Or should I say ChatGPT did all the heavy lifting and documented everything that it got and showed me all the data. And I was appalled by this index, but it explained how they're going to do what they do and say uncapped, because the chances of ever earning more than 6, 7, 8% was probably slim to none when you understood how this custom index worked. And the amazing thing was, I bet you most agents who offer these have no clue what that custom index does and how the index sponsor makes money. The index sponsor pays to be in, the insurance company generally pays the index sponsor a fee to use their index. Then the index sponsor, when I start getting into it, folks, and showing you, the index sponsor freely admits they keep the initial return up to the current prime rate. So whatever the prime rate is, that's the first return. They just keep it. Wherever prime is, we're going to take the return of the index right up to prime. I don't even know what prime is right now. And then they had another fee of 200 basis points for this. So they got what prime is plus another 200 basis points. And just you start looking at this, it's like, oh my God, this is crap. But the insurance companies love them because they can advertise uncapped. If you go with one of these annuities, I would avoid like the plague any of these proprietary indexes unless you truly do your own research. Don't rely on the broker or the agent. They're not going to do the research. They're going to tell you, oh yeah, they keep everything up to prime plus an additional 200 basis points. They're not going to tell you that. They probably don't even know it. Do your own research. And again, I think ChatGPT has a free feature where you can use the deep research capabilities under their free version or the $20 a month version. You only get a certain number of them, so don't waste them. And every order you give it is one, so 10 doesn't last long at all. But with that deep research capability, it blows away this free version. It gets deep and it tells you this could take 15 minutes, this could take me 30 minutes, and you just let it go. And it can find out an awful lot on an awful lot of things. And that's what I had to use to start digging deep into this and to download all these disclosure documents and then ask it to read the disclosure documents and find this and find that. I never shared any of this with you, Chris, but I did this when I was in Florida. So I'll share a little, I'll name the index as well, but I'll share some of this on a future show. I'm just warning, if you invest in any proprietary index, even from a sponsor whose name you recognize, and you will recognize the name of this sponsor, doesn't mean just because they're a household name, they have this wonderful, altruistic, beautiful index that exists for no other reason but to make you money. Do your own research and don't rely on the agent telling you to buy a proprietary index. I would prefer if you are going to do this, you use a more traditional index. The S&P 500, the Dow, the NASDAQ 100, the Russell 2000. Those are the more common traditional indexes. But you start getting into the proprietary ones, and then they start pushing uncapped, uncapped. Well, they're all swimming in the same pool. There's got to be a gimmick going on somewhere. And then you start seeing how these custom indexes work. It'll make your hair curl. So I personally would avoid them like the plague. It's totally up to you if you want to go with them. But if you go with them, make sure you understand what these indexes are doing, what the fees are, how they're charging. And you need a program that's going to be able to dig deep into the bowels of the internet to find all these disclosure documents and pull this data out for you. So I found ChatGPT, the deep research ChatGPT, to be indispensable on this. And it took it, I would say, at least 30 to 45 minutes total time to do all this research for me. And I would never have been able to have done it on my own. But I was just curious on this marketing gimmick, and I was bored, so I just started researching that index. So that would be the other caveat. I would avoid that. And if you are an agent or a producer or a broker or whatever, and you're selling these custom indexes, you better learn what the hell's in these indexes. Because if you are ever hauled by a lawsuit against you, and you can't explain an index that you just told someone to buy, that you didn't know the provider of the index takes right off the top whatever prime is, plus an additional 200 basis points for something else. I can't remember off the top of my head what. If you don't know all the fees embedded and the conflicts embedded, and you just recommended it, a plaintiff's attorney is going to have a field day with you. So I would definitely either avoid those custom indexes like the plague or truly get to understand them. And don't go by what the insurance company tells you. Do your own research on them and make sure you feel, and you might very well feel comfortable with it. And then I would definitely explain to your client, hey, on this index, here's how it works. Here's how the provider is going to take this much return or that much return or whatever the sausage behind the scene is. Make sure you know it so you can explain it to them. But that's just my caveat to the industry and, more importantly, to people who might be buying these. Understand how can they give you an uncapped or a leveraged 110, 112% of this index. How are they doing that if they're not doing it with options? How is the index doing what the index does? Who's sponsoring it? How are they getting paid? What are the fees embedded in this index? They ain't doing this for free, folks. So if you don't want to deal with all that, buy an index or buy an annuity or invest in an annuity that indexes to an index you understand. Just my thoughts. Take that and 50 cents and won't buy a cup of tea in China. Do your own due diligence. I'm not outwardly telling you shouldn't do it. I'm just saying you have to be careful and know what you're getting and don't rely on what someone tells you. They probably don't know much more than what you do. And I think we'll have to wrap up there and do Rila's next week.
Yeah, that sounds good. So that's where we'll be heading next week is onto the wonderful world of RILAs, registered index linked annuities, and talk about all their fun features and characteristics. Really appreciate everybody listening. If you have annuity questions, we still have a couple more Q&A shows happening this month. We do have plenty of questions, so don't feel obligated that you need to get one in for us to have successful shows. But if you have a particularly interesting one, there's still a chance that it might make it onto the last couple of shows we're going to do. And then we'll ongoing answer annuity questions through the normal course of the year like we do in our normal mixed shows. It's just we're a little more heavily focused on the Q&A shows on the annuities during the National Annuity Awareness Month. So that's my
And
pitch. That's my
for
pitch.
those who are new and you think, God, this is just Jim. Chris actually does a hell of a lot of talking, and if this was a Social Security dedicated show, you wouldn't have heard from me much. You would have just heard him.
I
We
was
all
actually
have
really
our
thankful this show that you talked a lot because my youngest daughter, who just got back from a choir trip in Italy, brought back a bug of some kind with her. So I've got some kind of Italian cold or something going on here. So,
oh, and you have no immunity built up for it.
Right, because it's a foreign attacker. So I'm having to work very hard to keep my voice in check. I've got my Ricolas and I've got my ice water, but even as I speak right here, it's really hard not to have my voice crack. So I'm glad I didn't have to talk a whole lot on this show.
Okay. Anyways, I just want a newer listener to know, even if Chris was healthy throat, it's just, I know the insurance, Chris knows Social Security and the retirement. So we all have the different areas we talk about. So during National Annuity Awareness Month, I probably talk more than I normally do. I'm getting better, and we're bringing other employees on, and they do a lot of talking. So trying to reduce how much I say, but during National Annuity Awareness Month, that's going to be hard.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like the Social Security questions. Only Chris answers them. I might read them, but he pretty much answers the entire question because I don't know anything about Social Security compared to him.
Well, there you go. So thanks, everybody, and we'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Salmier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salmier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.